Kingdom Works with Rick Prosser.
The first circle, and what I would say that every couple needs to start with, is connection.
One of the gentlemen she was talking to every week said that her call is the only person that she talks to other than kind of medical professionals.
We have guys in Stockton, part of our team. We have a ministry team that goes around, just talks to people, knocks on doors, says hello. And the biggest thing they get response for is, can we pray for you?
Elevating the kingdom of God throughout Newcastle and the Hunter. This is Kingdom Works with Rick Prosser.
Hey, Rick Prosser here, Kingdom Works. Hey, it's great to be with you again. Go to our website, kingdomworks.org.au. It's where you can find us. We'd love to catch up with you, hear from you. You might have some other thoughts and ideas, contributions, feedback, as well as little e-news that goes out every few weeks, and there's some really good information about what's coming up in our region. Tell you what, you're going to love my special guest today, Michael Jay. He resides in Brisbane. We won't hold that too much against him, but an educator, public speaker, and tremendous advocate, speaks and specialises in the space of DV, bullying, racism, all these sort of things that can permeate society and culture. Michael, it's great to have you on the program, mate.
Mate, thank you for reaching out. I'm incredibly happy to join you on this Monday morning, so thank you for making the effort.
I mean, it's you're coming down to the Hunter region, Newcastle, in April, and with a seminar coming up that's hosted by Macquarie Care, Macquarie Life Church there. Hannah's Story is the name of it. The seminar that you're doing. Let's just lean into that a little bit. I mean, you got a major on, and we'll touch on this in just a moment, some of the red flags of coercive control. But Hannah's Story, where's this come from? And yeah, a little bit of this.
Yeah, back. I mean, many of your listeners may remember this story, but let me pretend that I'm starting from point zero. In 2020, February 2020, just before the world went into shutdown with the whole COVID lockdown, on the 19th of February 2020, there was all over the news, Hannah Clark and her three little children, who were very young, were in the backseat of the car when their father set the car alight and murdered both his family, but then also committed suicide at the scene as well. It was a story that shocked Australia and rocked Australia. And that started the Small Steps for Hannah Foundation, which her parents set up. It started a whole movement around trying to get a conversation happening around coercive control, which at the time was a term held dear to academics, held dear to people up in the very highest levels of government or the legal world, but everyday people, that word was just not used. So it's since become a topic that's gained a lot of currency. New South Wales went live with the law on the 1st of July. Our Queensland Parliament approved it in March last year, and they think that the laws will probably start coming into effect in the next few months.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the good news is something good's come out of something.
100%.
Tragic. Horrendous. For you, Michael, I mean, you're a professional cricketer. You came to our nation as a young fella, Sri Lanka, as a refugee. What? I mean, it's incredible what you're doing now, speaking into this space, and as a male, particularly, what got you into it?
I think there was a little bit of a collective. There's a bit of guilt there, no question. I will happily own that, because I realised that I'd never walked in the shoes of somebody who'd spent 50% of the human race, who spend a chunk of their lives looking over their shoulders, in some sense of the word. And as a male, I'd never felt that. And it made me realize towards the end of my professional cricket career, I was around men who, with exceptions, of course, but I was around a culture that legislated for misogyny as a routine part of the everyday existence. It was legislated in jokes and attitudes and moods. And we took it for granted that was just because we didn't think we were perpetrating actual violence. We didn't realize that our attitudes were leading to a overall cultural norm of disrespecting and devaluing women. And that also extended sideways slightly into anyone with any level of marginal differences, the whole intersectionality of racism and, you know, sexual orientation and all of the disabilities and whatever. So it was a moment where I realized that as a man, and certainly in the gender violence space, and I load the word gender violence because I'm talking about gender violence. We're not saying that violence can't be perpetrated in either direction. So I want to make that clear. But in the case of gender violence, I realized that it was a male problem that women were having to deal with. And the notion that men could absolve themselves of responsibility and say it wasn't our problem. Well, if you, as in a general sense, if you are part of creating the problem, then there's a responsibility to resolve it. And to use a rather silly analogy, you know, if animals are being hurt, it is a human problem and it's not the animal's problems, in a very similar sort of silly analogy. So I started getting into this space, working with professional athletes to begin with, because that was a venue that I was comfortable speaking into. And that just grew, one thing grew to another. And I've now moved more away from that. But I've really started to get my teeth into this whole area around respect for women, gender equality, which, to be honest, it means that all humans are equal. And, you know, like you and I, if we're having an equal, happy, loving relationship with the people around us, everyone wins, not just the other side of the coin.
Yeah, I mean, there was a catalytic moment for you that really flicked, wasn't there? I wasn't speaking up, but there was this deep conviction that propelled you to act and speak up. Amazing.
Yeah, Rick. I mean, we set off here. We talked about the famous quote by Edmund Burke. Evil triumphs when good men remain silent. And it was a moment. I think just after I had my kids, and you know, we were living a beautiful, happy family life. And I realized that, you know, my children were 1, 2, and 3 years old, and they deserved a world. They deserved to inherit a world that was free of some of those barriers. My middle child's a girl, and I realized that, you know, her risk factor in her life had gone up exponentially the instant she was conceived as a female. In a pure statistical sense, her risk factors were exponentially higher. And in the modern world, at that time, 2005, it shouldn't be that your life changes its potential risk factors merely because two sort of chromosomes fused in one way or another. We should all have an equal chance of being safe and secure. But having two sons as well in between, I realized that the solution wasn't in teaching my daughter to be safer. The solution was in teaching my sons and their friends and their colleagues to live a world that was equal and respectful and beautiful. And their lives too would be a whole lot more beautiful for it.
Yeah, that's brilliant, mate. Brilliant. Hey, if you just joined us, Rick Prosser here, Kingdom Works. My special guest today, Michael Jay. He's an educator, public speaker, and he's coming down on the 2nd of April from Brisbane to Newcastle, sponsored by Macquarie Care seminar, Hannah's Story. Michael, in that you're going to lean into some red flags of coercive control. I think it'd be good. You touched on there before the phrase coercive control. If you could just unpack that a fraction, and then lean, and we'll touch on.
Yeah. Look, without giving too much of the Hannah Story thing away up front, but one of the things that Sue and Lloyd Clark, Hannah's parents, said afterwards, and this is clearly in hindsight, they said they were aware from the very minute that Hannah brought Rowan Baxter into their lives, they were aware that it wasn't right. They begged Hannah to reconsider her decision about her life partner. They had uneasy feelings all the way through. At no stage did they ever, ever, ever think that it would lead to mass murder. But it's not like even on that fateful day when the police knocked on their door, once the shock subsided, they do admit that maybe it wasn't that much of a shock. But what they didn't know was that it was called coercive control. All the behaviors that they saw, they said if someone had said to us, firstly, two things. If they'd said to us what we were witnessing was a guaranteed textbook predictor of murder, then we would have done something. But who writes those textbooks and which normal people read those textbooks? But secondly, they said if somebody had stopped using words like coercive control and simply said, what does poor behavior look like? What does insecure, defensive, aggressive behavior look like? Oh, yeah, we're an expert in that. But coercive control, now that's a term for academics and experts. So they never thought that they were talking about coercive control. Now they are alleged experts at it, and they clearly say we're not experts. The day we buried our daughter and our grandchildren, we became experts, but we became experts through the bitter, bitter aftermath of one of Australia's most infamous murder incidents.
Yeah, horrendous. I mean, this seminar that's coming up, I mean, you've obviously done this around the country. And I'm just conscious of the graphics, and for those listening, we'll put all the links in our feeds and so on to encourage you to be at this seminar on the 2nd of April. But it's all pink and stuff like that. So I'm imagining that most of the audience is female, which is great, and we've got some brilliant female advocates, particularly in our city, in our region, in this space, some really tremendous pioneering works happening. But gee, it'd be great to get males there.
Well, I mean, just last week I was in your neck of the world at the AGL Bayswater Power Plant. Yeah. Fantastic group of people. And I had an auditorium of 200 people, and I reckon 160 of them were men in high-vis engineering sort of suits. And there wasn't a dry eye in the house. And these were men who embraced what it meant to treat a person in a very, very cruel way. And, you know, that crosses all boundaries. And we had beautiful, beautiful examples of strong men working in those high-vis vest environments, which epitomizes what that blokey-bloke culture should be. But it just goes to show that there are some things that just transcend gender. It's just around human respect. Hannah happened to be a woman and Rowan happened to be a man. But, you know, and some of those factors are leaning into the gender divide, but really it could just as easily happen in the reverse direction, and you would hate to happen to your daughter, your friend, your neighbor. And even if it's not, even if you don't know the person, it's just a horrific outcome.
What are people going to take home if they get to this seminar?
Yeah, great question. I deliberately designed the program, Rick, with this moving away from education and training that is formal. This is very much storytelling, and Sue and Lloyd Clark begged me to create a story rather than a training resource. So it's not a PowerPoint full of information that you write down. You just sit there and you just sink into your chair and absorb it. But the main thing we wanted to move away from was this notion that this issue is a generational fix, because I'm sick of hearing that the area around gender violence, et cetera, is going to take 1.5, 2 generations to fix, because in that time we will lose too many lives. So we created a resource that was much more immediate. It was hopefully within minutes of leaving the presentation or ending it, you will make a phone call to someone you love and change their lives, get them out of a dangerous situation, stop a behavior. And I can promise you, a year and a half into the program, we have had over 50 examples of people coming up to us and saying, I'm not even going back to my home tonight. I'm going straight to my daughter's house to help her to pack. I'm not even going to stop for lunch because I've just seen something that is so immediate that she might not survive the night. As immediate as that. And last week when I was in Port Macquarie on the 5th anniversary of Hannah's death, it was full of professionals, law professionals who work in the DV space. And there was a woman in her 50s or 60s who I spoke to her afterwards, and I said, oh, you're having a serious conversation with your friend? And she said, yeah, I'm making a safety plan. And I went, oh, have you got a client that you're – and she goes, no, it's me. I work in this space. I'm a lawyer for 40 years, and today I realized – that I'm in danger tonight. And she goes, it never occurred to me all my life that I don't even think I'll survive tonight unless I'm, and I'm going, what are you talking about? This is your job. And she said, I know. I spend all my time, physician heal thyself analogy. She said, I'm in danger tonight and I'm making a safety plan as to how I'm going to keep myself safe tonight.
Unbelievable. I mean, no one's excluded from this. It's, gee. My 30-second elevator pitch on A Few Good Men, one of the programs that you do. I mean, one of my deep hopes is that we can get this message into men and create the awareness and perhaps some stronger voices, but just a little elevator pitch on A Few Good Men.
Yeah, it was a program. When I first started in this space, I created this thing called A Few Good Men. If people remember the famous Hollywood film, A Few Good Men, it was a court-martial drama set in the US. And one of the great lines was that Edmund Burke quote of, I think one of the lawyers used it around the lines of, you know, you allow evil to triumph if good men remain silent. It's been something that's been a lifelong motto of mine, because I realized there are so many of us good men, Rick, and many of us, including myself, comfort ourselves that we don't directly perpetrate, but our silence allows the men around us to get further embroiled in their attitudes. And Rowan Baxter was an example of a man who had probably lots of good men around him. They witnessed behaviors that later in postmortems and whatever, they say, oh my goodness, it was so, so, so dangerous, but we didn't know it and it was awkward to call it out. And for those who are not into the Harry Potter genre, which I'm not as well, but one of the great quotes from one of the Harry Potter films was Professor Dumbledore, who said, it is very difficult to stand up to enemies, but it's a lot harder to stand up to friends. And that is so true, isn't it?
Yeah, very powerful. Mate, it's been magnificent having you on the program. Well done to you, and congratulations for your courageous steps and place that you're you've taken in society throughout the nation. I'm sure your message goes beyond the borders.
Thank you, Rick. I mean, just to be clear, I'm a ventriloquist. I'm telling Hannah's story. And if you're moved and your life has changed because Hannah's speaking to us from beyond the grave, I'm privileged and honored enough to be the ventriloquist that gets to tell her story.
Yeah, I mean, you're pretty generous. I think you're more than that. You carry a deep conviction and a great honor and privilege to carry Hannah's story, absolutely. Yeah.
Mate, look forward to hopefully meeting you or some of your friends up in Newcastle in a couple of weeks' time, if Brisbane survives this rather little damp spell coming up, to put it mildly.
Fantastic. It's coming up, seminar, Hannah's story, April 2 at Macquarie Care. Is hosting that at Macquarie Life Church. Michael, brilliant having you on the program. All the best in everything that you're doing. Yeah, fantastic.
Good. Thanks for making time. See you, everyone. See you, Newcastle. Bye.
This has been Kingdom Works on Rema FM.